Hi, guys.
Hey.
Ready for my story, finally? I take it?
Yeah, let's go.
Well, what a coincidence, because I am ready to tell it. So, here goes. My story is about a guy named Mats. Oh, gosh, sorry. You know, my glasses have fogged up. You know, I will not be sad to stop wearing masks. So, there. Okay. Mats. He is the man of my dreams. Oh, but, you know, I'm ahead of myself, as usual. I know, pod, I'm a nerd. You call me the nerd. Like, hey, nerd, what's that book? Reading The Lord of the Rings for the 16th time?
Seems a lot. Yep.
What can I say? I'm devoted to science fiction and fantasy.
There's nothing wrong with that.
So, my story takes place in the future, on another planet, in my mind, in a country, in my mind, where a patriarchy is in total charge. Women are ornaments and broodmares. Extra daughters, those not easy to marry off, are delivered to training academies to become useful women. Information technicians, agricultural workers, and cannon fodder. One such training academy for useful women, or TAFU, is in a secluded valley several miles from one of the great chaotic cities. Its headmistress is named Mrs. Gray. Mrs. Gray is a widow with tragedy in her past. The motto of her academy is chastity, proficiency, utility. Sorry, exposition, I know, but entertainment. Escape. Oh, and it's spring. Oh, the trees are flowering. Come on, let's turn our faces up to the sun like the dandelions. Oh, come on, slip your mask down for just a second. Take a sip of the fresh air with me. Yes. There. All right, come on. It's all downhill from here, I promise. So, meanwhile, Mats. Remember Mats? He's been born and raised in a small town just downriver from the same great chaotic city. The town has been in decline for many years. Mats, in his 20 years of life there, has developed a twofold desire. He wants to be the ultimate handyman. He'll build you a deck, retile your bathroom floor, fix your plumbing, or repair your computer. And he is a tremendous appreciator of women. Of all kinds and configurations. He desires them all. And women, fortunately for him, of all kinds, etc., have always appreciated and desired him. In other words, Mats is good with his hands. And also, he's good with his hands. Oh, man. I'm sorry. I just love that line. Shut up. I know I'm a nerd. Mats is broad-chested and slim-hipped with soft green eyes and this wide and winning smile. Hang on again. Glasses. I exhaled too hard picturing Mats. He's perfect, okay? Shut up. I know I'm a nerd. There comes a time when Mats' hometown has declined to the point where there is nothing for him to build and repair, and no more women for him to appreciate and desire. So, one morning, suitcase in one hand and toolbox in the other, he catches the bus to the great chaotic city. He figures that there must be many things to build and repair there and many women to appreciate. He arrives in the city, and he isn't there an hour before he wishes he'd never left home. He fights his way along the noisy, crowded, dirty streets, clinging to his suitcase and toolbox. When he ducks into an alley to relieve himself, he's immediately attacked by several ragged figures who punch him, kick him, and tear his suitcase and toolbox out of his hands. He's struck hard on top of his head by one of the ragged figures, wielding a ball-peen hammer. He manages to stagger out of the alleyway. He stumbles into the street and bumps into the rear gate of a pickup truck stopped at a traffic light. He heaves himself over the gate and collapses onto the bed of the truck. Then, all goes black. When he comes to, he's lying in a small bed in a small dim room. He notices immediately that he cannot hear a thing. He's deaf as the proverbial post. He puts his hands to his ears and he feels the thick, half-dried blood that has streamed from them. Matt's inadvertent rescuer is the steward, named, happily, Stuart. Stuart the steward of the Training Academy for Useful Women, or TAFU, situated in the secluded valley and headed by Mrs. Gray. Remember Mrs. Gray? Stuart the steward is a kindly man of advanced years. He'd found Matt in the back of his pickup and put him to bed in his spare room. He bathes and tends Matt's cuts and punctures, feeds him some soup, and leaves him to sleep. Before drifting off, Matt thinks, "Well, I left home this morning. I was in the city for less than an hour. Now I'm here and I can't hear a thing." Then, for the second time that day, all goes black for him. Matt's awakes the next morning, all aches and stings, and sporting a large and hypersensitive goose egg on his crown. He's still deaf as a post, but he feels oddly calm about his deafness. He wonders if it might not be useful among strangers. Stuart visits him occasionally to tend his wounds and feed him more soup. In the days that follow, Matt improves and gets out of bed. He cleans the cottage and makes the meals. Matt has decided, following his oddly calm inner promptings, that if he is to be deaf, it might be wise for him and somehow advantageous in the long run to be dumb as well. As for Stuart, he has discovered with the years that his interest in the stewardship of the academy has moved more into the realms of the organizational and theoretical. And he likes to drive the tractor around. He needs a younger man with practical skills. It is Stuart's great hope that the fates have smiled and that Matt is a practically skilled deaf-mute. One afternoon, Matt is sitting on a stool in the small kitchen garden beside the cottage, basking in the sun and surveying all before him. He sees Stuart supervising the pair of agro workers in the broad rutabaga patch. He sees behind the tall windows of one of the classrooms in the main building four blurs of white light where the techs have their faces in their computer screens. He sees on the lawn to one side of the building the two infantry women practicing hand-to-hand combat. Eight young women of all kinds and configurations. His goose egg is still sensitive, but an idea begins to take form in his mind. In the evening, Matt returns to his stool in the garden. He imagines the extra daughters asleep in their cots. There's only one dim light in the last window on the fourth floor, the window of Mrs. Gray's room. Matt sees a tall, womanly figure standing in that window. Then, suddenly, he hears the hoot of an owl and the song of crickets. He smiles his wide and winning smile, nods his head once, and resolves to be a deaf-mute for the time being. Oh, you know, I love this time of year. Oh, the pandemic can't get to that. You know, the wet earth smell and that leftover look from winter. You know, things are waking up. They're shaking it off. I just love it. So, Matt's wounds heal. His goose egg reduces in size and sensitivity, and his hearing gets gradually sharper. He gives the tractor a tune-up and makes adjustments to Stuart's home electronics so that they're swift and synchronous. Stuart presses his calloused palms together and gives thanks to the fates. Matt becomes assistant steward and general handyman. He is soon a fixture of life at the TAFU. He wires and weeds, paints and plasters, unplugs toilets, repaves the parking lot, trims the shrubs, and mows the lawn. He works steadily and in almost complete silence. He's the handyman. He has eight young women moving around him for hours every day. He sees the figure of Mrs. Gray in her window every night. He smiles wide. He never says a word. He never lets anyone catch him looking. The extra daughters become accustomed to Matt's presence, while at the same time finding it stirring. They figure he must be immune to their sharp tongues. They agree that he is, as one of them puts it, easy on the eyes. They exchange opinions about what certain parts of him would look like should they ever be revealed, which makes for some tension, especially since Mrs. Gray likes to remind them of the Academy's motto, stressing the first of its imperatives, chastity. She strongly advises them that one cannot be maximally useful and proficient if one is not first and foremost chaste. One hot afternoon, the two infantry women, Lila, tall and thin as a whip, and Lola, short and thick and hard as an oak stump, have finished their hand-to-hand combat exercises and are sitting against the hot brick wall around the corner from the main building, passing a cigarette back and forth between them. Only a few yards away, Mats, in a sleeveless t-shirt and worn khaki shorts, is bent over a lawnmower. He was mowing the lawn and the mower suddenly died. His muscular neck, shoulders, and arms are tanned and gleaming with sweat. "Look at him," says Lola. "I should be spent after we hit each other and threw each other around, but I'm not. I'm still stirred up. I'm more stirred up. I want to see. Oh, I want to know." "You're right," says Lila. "Anybody who's ever lived at all knows there's more to life than the imperatives of this academy's motto." "That describes you and me to a T," says Lola. "Besides, one of these days we'll be risking our lives for this damned country." "Come on," says Lila. She stubs the cigarette out on the brick wall and rises. Lola rises with her. "What are you thinking?" she asks. "Tool shed," says Lila. A few yards beyond where Mats kneels, a small shed stands in the shade of an old oak tree. Lila and Lola stride resolutely over to Mats and persuade him to accompany them to the shed. Mats smiles, exhales, and follows the two trainees. They stop at the door to the shed and stand looking at each other. "You first," says Lola. "Great," says Lila. "Thanks." She takes Mats by the hand and they go into the shed. Inside, they stand and look at each other. Lila's eyes are open wide. Matt smiles and ducks his head. Then he takes off his clothes and kicks off his shoes. Lila looks him up and down. Matt lies down on the floor and reaches up to take Lila's hand. He utters the first sound he's uttered in weeks, a deep sigh. He pulls Lila down beside him and proceeds to appreciate her for all he and she are worth. Outside, Lola hears the deep sigh. Then she hears, for quite some time, a succession of other sounds that end in a crescendo. A little while later, Lila emerges from the shed. She's flushed and sweating, has her smock on backwards and inside out, and is carrying her pants in one hand. Lola rises, an inquiring look on her face. Lila says, He hasn't. He's still. Get in there!" Lola jumps, then runs into the shed. Inside, she stops in her tracks. She sees Matt lying as nature made him on the floor. She sees also that Lila has spoken the truth. Matt reaches his arms up to her. She tears off her smock, shucks out of her pants, and dives. And several acts of appreciation are happily performed. "Oh, damn it! Not again. Can't see a damned thing. Yeah, I'm just gonna stick them on top of my head. Done with these glasses. All right, where was I? You guys okay?
Yeah.
Everyone's still with me?
Are you?
Okay, so Lila, Lola, and Matt have several more appreciation sessions in which the appreciations become more varied and intense. But one afternoon, they're caught by the pair of agri workers who come to the shed in search of the gas can. They open the door upon an intricate threefold appreciation that instantly expands their worldviews and distresses their plans for the future. Soon, of course, the four techs catch on too, and shortly, a great deal of energy and ingenuity are being put into scheduling and relative equity. Meanwhile, Mats is still the handyman. Which he somehow manages. He might be a little tired, but he's nothing if not appreciative. His only trouble is that he needs to find a way to stop being a deaf mute. Because he is not only tired of it, but he feels that the deception is becoming less and less appropriate. Meanwhile, Mrs. Gray has observed the uptick in out-of-the-ordinary, oddly energetic comings and goings. As a widow with tragedy in her past, she has full understanding of what's going on. As well, as far as she can tell, the Academy has never been more productive or had better morale. An idea begins to take form in her mind. One evening, a very relaxed Mats is sitting in the garden, looking at the main building, the windows of which are all dark. Huh, thinks Mats. Then he catches sight of a dark figure in the left periphery of his vision. He turns his head and sees Mrs. Gray walk into the garden. She stops and stands before him. She unfastens the front of her dressing gown, lets it drop, and stands there in all of her mature and magnificent nakedness. Mats smiles and ducks his head. He rises, she comes to him, they embrace. Soon, they are performing an act of deep appreciation among rows of burgeoning radishes. Afterwards, they lie together in the dirt, looking up at the countless stars. Before too long, Mrs. Gray is making gestures meant to communicate her desire to repeat the appreciative act. Mats is exhausted, and while he wants nothing more than to even more deeply appreciate Mrs. Gray, it is a process that he wishes to pursue over time, starting, say, after a good night's sleep. Mrs. Gray, he says, I can't. Not now. Mrs. Gray raises herself on an elbow. You spoke, she says. Mats gawks. I thought I felt something happening as we... You heard me, says Mrs. Gray, sitting up. He can see all of her sitting up, dirty and naked in the starlight. She is astoundingly beautiful. Mats says, it's a miracle! Well, I hope, Pod, that you were entertained. Yeah, I'm thinking of expanding it to a novella. It has lots of implications. Anyway, I hope to win both the Hugo and the Nebula Awards, then sell the rights to make a Netflix series. What can I say? I'm Loretta the Nerd. Alrighty, who's next? Ready? Duck, duck, duck. Fiametta!
Finally.